Blog Talk Radio.
This queen, I ain't seen you in a minute. Wrote this letter and finally decide to spin it. Signed, sealed, delivered for us to grow together. Love has no limit, let's spin a slow forever. I know your heart is weathered by what does did to you. I ain't gonna start them cause I probably did it too. Because of you feelings I handle with care. Some recognize your life but they can handle the glare. You know I ain't the type to walk around with matching shirts. The relationship is effort, I will match your work. I wanna be the one to make you happiest and hurt you the most. They say the end is near, it's important that we close to the most high. Regardless of what happened on him, let's rely. It's important we communicate and tune the fate of this union to the right pitch. I never call you my to even my boo. There's so much in the name and so much more in you. You understand the union of woman and man. And sex and a single is where they assuming it land. But that's fly by night for you in the sky right. During these cold shy nights, moon, you my light. If heaven had a height, you would be that tall. Ghetto to coffee shop, you, I see that all. Let's stick to understanding and we won't fall. For better or worse times, I hope to me you call. So I pray every day more than anything. Friends will stay as we begin to lay this foundation for a family. Love ain't simple, why can't it be anything worth having? You work at annually. Granted, we've known each other for some time. It don't take a whole day to recognize sunshine. It's kind of fresh, you listen to more than hip-hop. And I can catch you in the mix from beauty to thrift shop. Plus you shit-pop when it's time to. Thinking you fresh, suggesting beats I should rhyme to. At times when I'm lost, I try to find you. You know to give me space when it's time to. My heart's dictionary defines you. It's love and happiness. Truthfully, it's hard trying to practice abstinence. The time we committed love, it was real good. Had to be for me to arrive, and it still feel good. I know the sex ain't gonna keep you, but as my equal, it's how I must treat you. As my reflection, the light, I'ma lead you. And whatever's right, I'ma feed you. Yo, I tell you the rest when I see you. Peace.
height 5'7". Caramel complected, body like heaven. Met her through the sister of my man Big Vince. Like something from out the flicks, we've been in love ever since. She called me her chocolate brother, I call her my sugar sister. Knew shorty could work it since before I ever kissed her. I never dissed her, painted my picture to hit. But because sex she wasn't with, she started flipping the script. Like listen man, I'm Queen Amina. Amina's not no freaking, that game is weakened. Keep trying to hit, I could quit speaking. Tariq, in fact, you being Black Thought, don't get you closer. I dig your butt, won't bone you because I'm so-called supposed to. Most of them would, but that couldn't be me, that's not my flavor. Go home and think about that, maybe later on I'll page ya. I contemplated and then concluded she was bluffing. Steady pursuing, screwing, getting nothing but the silent treatment.
Girl, you know that you just stop giving.
About my loving situation, when patience was a virtue, but I wasn't used to waiting. I want some Marvin Gaye healing, feeling this real inside. I slip and slide, my ride will keep you occupied. I'd love to get with it like that, but my baby's kitty cat, Captain Lock, love boat is docked at the shore. And what for? Later for groupies on tour. Why won't my sugar call me no more? I mean, my queen gets upset, rejecting and sexually neglecting, saying I'm more sewer than Dos Effects and close-minded. It's like I'm blinded by the skinning. I'm into women because of that. This one's ending communication. Temptation plays a vandal. Freaking my brain, my mind, gripping the handle on physically scandalous acts. Yo, she knew what I wanted, but she fronted. Bust it. Along with the song, plus the strong feelings on my mind, desire to intertwine, combine and blend. Baby, bust the message that I send, ain't no need to pretend, because it's real till the end. I provide a place to hide from rhyme, hard times and living tribes, while I open your mind, you're in my life like love. It ain't no way no one can rise above what's real, that's why I'm feeling like you're making me buck. I puff a L-50 juice while I walk in the rain, heart feeling killer pain while I hop the train, dollar number to the rest, and ain't no messages left. Regardless, my chest thump from stress. Yo, it's a mess. I don't know what I got to do to make you understand. I'm for real and that's no question. No fronting or no guessing. Undressing, caressing in the span that I contain in my hand. Can touch and make you say that I'm such a man and call my name. So let me set your body aflame. I never treat you like a dame or run game. Now who's to blame? I never said you go for brothers with a lot of dough. But I just wanted you to know.
If words was crack, we would have the most potent shit around. If words is weed, then we got them by the pound. Get high with us tonight as Drip the Mic has found the perfect host to bring our good folks that sound. Every Tuesday it goes down. Your man Hezekiah has broken ground on the Drip the Mic Network, and he brings the Author's Lounge. This is where we meet and greet. Man, Drip the Mic don't compete. No need to be consumed with greed or dishonesty. We lead, uplift, and discuss as our need is to bring verbal muscle to the struggle and hustle to keep dropping digital and paperbacks for the world to read. The Author's Lounge, going up on a Tuesday. As he runs the mic, quarterback-like genius when he writes, and he picks his words Tuesday. This script could not have been better written in a movie. A good friend, Hezekiah, has moved in, then committed to moving in our circle and blessing us with his proven pen. Prioritize tuning in 6 p.m. Central and Eastern at 7 p.m. and listen in, because we be going in, and we would love for you to share this experience. Delirious shenanigans accompanied with verbal adjectives, praising words like they are gods, broken down into nouns, verbs, predicates, and adjectives. Since I learned of the days when, like, baseball cards, our melanin displayed us as property for trade, I prayed never again will we be a slave, so I behave as if I'm a human paraphrase. Learn to enunciate, ad-lib, and use my scribe to communicate. And today, the Artist Lounge provides a stage for like-minded kings and queens of the literary community, other artists and those who create to explore. The Drip to Mic Hotel has opened the doors, as the next 2 hours you endure will be free of commercials, non-judgmental and impartial, with Hezzy holding it down like Thurgood Marshall. Ladies and gentlemen, kings and queens, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Author's Lounge with your host and my man, Hezzy, in the building.
What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody? I'm glad you all could make it tonight to the Author's Lounge. And your host, I am your host for tonight, Author Hezzy, and it's presented by Drip to Mic. The number is 646-378-0355. You can call in or press 1 to speak. And we got a super amazing show for you all tonight. And our first guest, man, I don't even know how I got him on the show. I was just roaming through Facebook one day. And this guy was like, I'm free to do some interviews if anybody want to interview me. So, you know, I was interested, and he hit me back. And when he gave me his bio, I was like, dude, they should be calling you to do your interviews. But it's just amazing. Me and him have been speaking for the past 2 weeks, you know, just talking about different stuff, man. And it's just an honor to have this guy on the show. I'm going to read a little bit of his bio, which is amazing in itself. His name is Tewa Uwawu. He's a historian, archivist, genealogist, student of middle childhood education, and an independent hip-hop artist. This author has visited over 45 states and 60 countries. He has recorded and performed with musicians in the Netherlands, South Africa, Senegal, and several other countries. During his travels, he has studied abroad. In 2014, he studied in the Dominican Republic. While in the Dominican Republic, he studied Caribbean diseases, Dominican history, and culture. Then he studied Portuguese, Brazilian history. Wow, let's go on and on. He has also participated in fundraisers, food drives, and back-to-school giveaways for people in need in Cleveland, Haiti, Philippines, Cape Verde, and other countries. And I want to introduce y'all to the amazing Mr. Tay. Are you on the line?
Peace, King. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate you. Can you hear me?
I hear you. I hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to be on your platform.
Man, it's an honor to have you. I'm like, when do you have time to do all that you do?
Right. Man, just got to make time.
You know, because, hold on. First of all, I want you to introduce yourself to the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you definitely did me justice on the intro. I'm an author, an MC, a hip-hop artist, a musician, and I'm a world traveler.
Wow. Over 60 countries. That is amazing in itself.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. What got you started doing what you're doing? Because basically, you're a revolutionary. I mean, and so young at that, like, how can you explain to the black community what you do?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I do a lot. It started with my family, for sure. You know, my family is from Cleveland. My great-grandfather, he was in the UNIA. He was a follower of Marcus Garvey. My grandmother, she used to tell me about him, you know. So I always had a love and respect for black people and black history. My uncle, he started a black nationalist organization, you know, in the neighborhood. And, you know, ever since then, I just always loved learning about black people and traveling. My mom, she drove the Greyhound bus, so she used to take us to different little cities, you know, Detroit, New York, Chicago. you know, so that kind of sparked my interest early on as far as traveling.
Man, I'm going to give you a hand clap for that one, man. That's amazing. So tell me about this, being an artist and an author and all that you do. Explain to me, what was your influence into getting to writing in the first place? And to write a book.
Oh, okay. Now, the book is called The Afro Set. So it's an organization that my uncle founded in the 1960s. So they was basically like a self-defense group, but they had a lot of social programs. So they opened up shops, and they taught African history, African culture. They taught African language, Swahili. They taught self-defense. You know, they learned how to do target practice. They shot rifles. They used machetes, you know, martial arts and stuff like that. But they taught classes about, you know, drug awareness, economics, and different things like that. They had a lot of social programs. They would do free breakfast, free lunch. You know, they built the theater. My uncle was a poet and a musician, so they would have, inside of the theater, they would have poetry readings. They would have musical performances. They would play the African drums. They would have fashion shows. And they would create their own economy by designing Afrocentric items. So they would sell, like, dashikis, dresses, necklaces, earrings, pottery, artwork, and different things like that. They did a lot of community policing. You know, if gangs came into the neighborhood, they would run them out.
Is this all in Cleveland?
Yeah, this is in Cleveland, Ohio.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, if pimps came into the neighborhood, they would run them out. If drug dealers came into the hood, they would run them out. When the police came into the community and they were beating people up, they would confront them. So it's a very exciting book. It's a lot of uprisings, rebellions, riots, and shootouts, and different things that took place.
That man. So, is Tay your original name, or did you change your name?
Yeah, I changed it. That's my African name. My uncle, they organization, when people joined, they would give them an African name. So I decided to give myself an African name, Taye Uhuru. So Taye, that's a Ethiopian word. In Ethiopia, they speak the language called Amharic. So Taye, it means to see something, to have a vision. Uhuru, that's a Swahili word. That's a language that they speak in Eastern Africa, in Kenya and Tanzania. And Uhuru means freedom. So my name means he who has seen freedom.
Okay, amazing. Okay, we're going to paint a picture right here. Tell the audience, give us a sample of what Africa is and what it looks like.
Oh, wow. I mean, well, number one, Africa is the most diverse continent in the world. Africa has the most countries in the world. Africa has the most languages in the world. So a lot of times we generalize Africa as one place, but Africa has the most beautiful beaches, the most beautiful landscape, the most beautiful animals, the most beautiful people, the most beautiful minerals, diamonds, gold, platinum, the best things in life that we can think of, food, culture, music. It all comes from Africa.
Man, that's a big dream of mine. You know, but I got some African friends, and they all can speak different languages. Like, our studies is not just distinct studies. They study everything.
Yeah, that's true. And you really need to
talk to them. You know, it's like, man.
Yeah.
In America, we have been stuck.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you rarely meet an African that speaks just one language. Because like I said, like Ethiopia, that's one country, but they have 80 different ethnic groups. So each group has a different language, a different culture, a different, you know, everything. So that's only one country.
And with everything going on today in the world and your vision, what is your vision for the future, and how can we bridge the gap for the Black community and the Black society to accept one another and to come together as one?
Well, I've been trying to do different things. I mean, the first thing is just trying to produce more positive content from my experience and from my travels, showing people things that they wouldn't normally see on CNN or Fox, or if they Google you know, so I try to show beautiful images of Africa. I think history is very important. The more we learn about our past and our history, we have a better outcome as far as the future. And I try to stay active in the community, in the Black community at home and abroad. I try to give back all around the world. You know, we have to become independent and create our own financial institutions. You know, I try to practice cooperative economics. I co-founded a food co-op in 2016. I was a president of the co-op for about 2 or 3 years. So I kind of try to do a lot of different things.
Man, that's amazing. And what I want to know, when you went to the Dominican Republic and, you know, to the islands, how was that culture like? What is it different from Africa, or they basically, you know, they all come together and connected?
Well, it depends on the country, because there's so many different countries in the Caribbean. But I lived in the Dominican Republic. So it's a Spanish-speaking country. So it's a mixture. Mm-hmm. It's a mixture of African, Caribbean, Native American, and European culture. So, you know, they were colonized and enslaved as well. So you see some similarities mm-hmm. and some differences. It's not as much racism, but it's more yeah. colorism. You know what I'm saying?
See, what people don't know, they had slaves there way before they made it to the United States.
Yeah, definitely.
And for our cultures to change, like, it's just crazy because, you know, I often study African cultures and stuff like that. But, you know, Haiti is mainly was built by Blacks.
True.
Discovered by Blacks. You know, way before Christopher Columbus decided to get in the boat, the Africans was on the boat over to these islands.
That's true.
So what do you have planned for your future, and who was your inspiration as you getting started doing music and writing? Because I've been following you on YouTube and everything. Your stuff is just, you know, it's conscious.
Thank you.
And to really get people to open their eyes to somebody that's conscious in America is totally hard, because we've been programmed badly and wrong for so long that we can't comprehend when somebody's conscious or not.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the future, I want to keep traveling, keep documenting history. I do tours. I take groups to different parts of Africa. We go to Egypt. We go to Cape Verde, Senegal, Ghana, South Africa, Kenya. I've taken college students, middle school students, high school students, young adults, elders. That's my main focus right now. As far as music, I'm going to continue to do music forever. You know, that's something that I'll
tell you next time. You can take me. I'll be willing
to
go.
You definitely welcome. You know, everybody welcome.
And so with your group that you're running right now, can anybody join, or is it a special or a process they got to go through?
Are you saying to go to Africa?
Oh, no, just to, like, to be involved with your organization.
Oh, I mean, well, I don't really have an organization. It's just me. You know what I'm saying? I'm
okay,
pretty much doing everything independently. But I do network and collab. Right, right. I collaborate and work with people all the time. So, yeah, if anybody want to reach out and we can network and do something, I'm always open and available for that. Yeah, anytime.
Okay. Well, we want to get a little bit on to who you are as a person. And who was your inspiration growing up? And I know your uncle was one of them. You said that.
Definitely.
And
yeah, I mean, growing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, growing up, my inspirations was mostly family. But like I say, my mom, she gave me my first Black history book. And it went on from there, you know, just studying and learning about so many great Black men and women from around the world. Those have been my inspirations. The Malcolm X's, the Marcus Garvey's, the Harriet Tubman's, the Assata Shakur's, you know, people like that, you know, outside of my own family's history.
That's amazing. So tell us a little bit about your book. Go in a little detail about that.
Okay, yeah. So the book, I mean, primarily is focused on the city of Cleveland's history. you know, it starts off with the Great Migration because, you know, most of us came from the South, and this was after slavery and after sharecropping. We came up north to try to get better jobs.
You know what I found out?
Uh-huh.
You know what I found out? The Midwest had slaves, too. Chicago had slaves.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I'm just basically documenting the struggle of African Americans in Cleveland, you know, the things that they had to go through, integration and trying to desegregate the schools, you know, because in the 1960s, a lot of the footage and videos that we see African Americans being attacked by dogs, beat by police, water hose.
Definitely.
So I'm trying to tell the story of a group that actually fought back, you know, physically, economically, historically.
Wow, that's amazing. Where can they find this book?
Oh, okay. I have a website. My website is Camp Cleveland, CampCleveland.org. I'm also on social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and my name on there is Camp Cleveland.
Okay. What's up? Now, Mr. Hip Hop, because, you know, that's my thing, too. Hip Hop. I even sleep with hip hop. So what got you into being a hip hop artist?
Oh, man. I mean, I was blessed. Fortunately, I've been listening to hip hop my whole life. So I had older brothers and I had a father that played hip hop early on. So in the 80s, you know, I got a chance to hear Slick Rick and Rakim and KRS-One and NWA and Public Enemy. You know, I've been hearing this music my whole life. You know, so I've been inspired by hip-hop as far as I can remember. But I really didn't start writing my own raps until I was in, you know, maybe like 7th or 8th grade. And around that time, I'd say I was inspired by Bone Thugs and Harmony. That was the biggest group, you know, from where we came from. And then it made it more realistic.
Do you freestyle?
No, I don't freestyle. I like to write. That's why I write more like, you know, conscious, so I can think out what I'm saying. You know, I want to say something more.
Yeah, I almost had you. I was going to get you to spit a little something while you on the show.
Yeah, they might have to check out the video, man, because I want them to, you know what I'm saying? I want to leave them with some gems. I don't want to just rhyme. I want them to, you know, you see my videos, though, but they won't be disappointed. They won't be disappointed.
And they can find them on YouTube, right?
Yeah. Please check out my YouTube page. I got some nice images, you know what I'm saying, that's going to get my point across. Because I'm really talking about something significant, you know what I'm saying? I got a song called Do Revolutionaries Go to Heaven? And this song, I wrote it while I was living in South Africa, and I filmed it in South Africa. At the time, I was staying in Johannesburg. I was living in a neighborhood called Mabonane. And in this neighborhood, it's rappers, it's singers, it's dancers, photographers, painters, you know, any type of artist that you can think of lives in this neighborhood. So it's a very unique place. Like the guy next door to me, he rap. The guy upstairs from me make beats. The girl down the hall, she sings, you know. So it's just a plethora of creative people living in this one area. And then when I was walking outside every day, this was during the lockdown when things first shut down, it's a lot of murals and paintings in my neighborhood where I was staying, you know, paintings of people like Marcus Garvey, Tupac, Harriet Tubman, Nipsey Hussle, Martin Luther King. So it was a very inspirational area, and, you know, I decided to write about it. And I have another.
So
I have
how did they accept you coming from the States and just, you know, living and mingling in Africa?
Oh, yeah, there was nothing but love. I never had one single incident or one problem.
Okay.
I stayed a whole year.
That's amazing in itself. You know, because you know how the U.S. do. They paint a picture for us, and it's not always the right picture.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
You know, I watched this South African movie where the guy, these little kids were stealing cars, and then they grew up to be the biggest drug dealer. And, man, I love that movie. I wish
Are
I could think
about,
of the name.
Paradise Jerusalem.
Yes, that is my movie. Yo, I love
that movie. Yeah, they got some good movies out there. If
that
the average African American seen that, they would like that movie. That's a good movie.
Man, and I like gangster stuff too, so that was right up my alley, yo.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled it up and I watched it. I watched it three times, yo, because I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing movie. I love that movie. Yeah, South Africa do have some hot movies, man. People need to check them out.
Yeah, they got some good music too.
Okay, man, I'm so glad you came on this interview.
Likewise, so, I truly appreciate you.
We still got 20 more minutes. We can talk about some stuff. I want to know, since you're on the show and you've traveled to these countries, how was it to study in the Dominican Republic, to actually go to that university, and Spanish is basically the only language?
I mean, it was fun. It was exciting. I had to work hard, you know, because I'm not fluent in Spanish, so I was kind of learning as I go. But, you know, it was people in my classes that could help me, and the professors, you know, they was real cool. It wasn't like a stressful situation or anything like that. We was constantly learning. We was going on field trips and excursions, and so it was a lot of physical activities as well. We wasn't always in the classroom. You know, we would go to museums. We would go to historic sites. We went to the hospital. You know, we had to go in the lab. We had to view things and, you know, different things like that. And I was living with a Dominican family at that time, so it was a real cool experience.
Was it like a program for you to go there, or you just actually decided just to go there?
It was a program because I was studying at community college, and the programs that they were offering was to places like France or China or Spain. Like, I wanted to go somewhere where it was black people, you know, so I ended up making friends out there, and I ended up working at an orphanage and a community center in the Dominican Republic. So I did a lot of tutoring. I brought my computer in and let the kids use their computer and, you know, play games and stuff like that, because they didn't have access to a lot of those things.
So I'm curious, how old are you?
I just turned 36.
Wow. Man, I'm going to give you another hand clap. For the younger generation, y'all need to listen to this man, because he's only 36 years old.
Thank you.
And he's been in more places than a person in a lifetime will never go. And he pursued his dreams, and he didn't quit, never gave up. That is super amazing, man. I want to commend you on all that you do for society as a whole.
Thank you. I really appreciate you.
Because we need more black men like you in this world. We really do. You are the next leader. You are the next leader. I just want you to know that. You are the next leader.
Thanks, Kenny.
So, give me your take. I know you watched it. On Judas and the Black Messiah.
Oh, yeah. That was filmed in Cleveland. I know some people that was in that movie.
Yes, it definitely was. So, what was your take on the whole show, and how does the government affect now what you are doing or trying to do? Is there any repercussions, or do you just do what you do out of love? You kind of see where I'm going with this question?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a reality. I mean, it's a reason why we don't have black leaders and strong black men that stand up and speak about African history and unity and culture and economics. Is dangerous, you know, unfortunately, but like you say, I'm doing it out of love, so nothing is going to stop me from doing what I can do and doing what I can control, you know what I'm saying? So hopefully I can inspire others, and, you know, maybe one day things will change. You know, if you're blessed enough, we'll live to see it, but sometimes we got to prepare for our kids and our grandkids and our great-great-grandkids, so we got to keep the struggle going. But I think the movie was sad, and it was unfortunate what happened to Fred Hampton, but he still, even though he died almost 50 years ago, his influence, his impact is still around. So I'm sure that that movie did inspire some people.
Mm-hmm. You know, because all they've been showing us before Fred Hampton is the L.A. version of the Black Panthers.
Right.
We never got the whole scoop that they was everywhere.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And it seems like when Black people come together and we get a leader for us to follow, they always take them away from us.
Definitely.
So I want to talk about, how do you feel about LeBron James finally speaking up and, you know, standing on the shoulders of our ancestors and is using his voice?
I think that's a good thing. I really take mm-hmm. my hat off to him because he's made so much money. He's had so much success. So for him to still, you know, come out and speak on certain things and be visible, I think that's very, very important. And those things are going to last longer. You know, when he's done playing basketball and he's not around no more, you know, like Muhammad Ali, you know,
mm-hmm.
people will remember those things.
Most definitely. You know, so what projects you working on? What you got coming up next?
I've been taking it kind of slow. I've just been focusing on my travel business, organizing groups to go back to Africa. I got a few people lined up. We did a tour in Egypt. That was in January. And that's about it. I've been working on some new music. I've just released a new song with one of my guys in South Africa. And I've been promoting the book. I've been doing a lot of interviews.
So are you going to write another book, or you just going to, that was your thing right there?
Well, I think the next thing that I want to do is, when I was writing the book, I did a lot of interviews. I was able to sit down with a lot of the elders and freedom fighters that were around in the 1960s. So I think maybe next year, if things open back up a little bit, I want to start working on a documentary.
Definitely, because we need your influence and we need your voice in the community, and we need to read or maybe to listen to what you got to say, you know, because you are doing all this traveling, you're doing all this, you know. So definitely the world needs it. I know it's kind of hard now, because, you know, the restrictions on what you can do and everything like that, but definitely we need your work.
Thank you.
So other than your uncle, name some of the other people that you have talked to that have been a big influence on you.
I mean, like I say, it's family, my grandmother, my mom, my uncle, my cousin. My cousin Nikki, she was the first person in my family to go to Africa. So she went to Africa like in the 90s. You know, she got a chance to live out there and study abroad. And then I got an older cousin, John. He was like the first person to actually going to genealogy and studying the family tree and the family history. So they was kind of doing it, you know, maybe when the internet wasn't available. So it was a little bit harder, you know, to access these things and documents and different things like that. So they definitely influenced me as well.
Wow, that's crazy, because, you know, many black families back in them times, it was no traveling. It wasn't getting to know none of your history.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, just quiet and numb. They wouldn't tell you nothing. You know what I mean?
You're right about that.
Your family to do that for you all, man, that's just, I can imagine, like, if my mom was like, you can go to Africa and study here. Go ahead, do this and do that. It would have been eye-opening. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was life-changing.
That's amazing. So what kind of programs do y'all do for the kids and the families and stuff? But I know you said y'all feed the families and stuff, and how can people contribute to that cause?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If anybody interested in donating or volunteering, they can definitely reach out to me. That would be greatly appreciated. We just do different things, you know what I'm saying? Like my brother, he has a nonprofit, so for Christmas, we gave away, I think, like 20 bikes and scooters and, you know, gifts for the children. That's something we did. I did warm winter drives, giving away coats and hats. We then did back-to-school drives, giving away book bags and school supplies and different things like that. One of my tours, we go to Cape Verde,
we collect money, then we buy school supplies for the children at the elementary school out there. We were supposed to build like a recording studio in 2020, but then COVID happened, so.
Okay. Well, I got a movie coming up. If you want to contribute to that and be on the soundtrack,
okay.
I would definitely appreciate that. That's amazing.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely interested. Wow.
You know, so everything comes together, you know, for cause, man. And
right.
Just the past few years, being through what we went through, you know, with the George Floyd incident, the Breonna, the down here when the guy getting, you know, killed by two white guys, man, it's just been a struggle and it's been hard on the black psyche, you know.
Right.
Because we haven't been thinking about what's been happening to us. We was too worried about buying some Jordans and looking fly. And then when this landed on our front desk, it opened up our eyes. You know what I'm saying? When this landed on our front door, it opened up our eyes.
Right.
And so with you reaching out to the community and all of that, and the protests that's been going on, what are your feelings of continuing this legacy and just to bring hope to the black community?
I mean, like I say, I try to do as much as I can. You know, we have to be independent and realize that if we want something done, we got to do it ourselves. You know, once we develop that mentality, you know what I'm saying? Because other groups of people, they have grocery stores, they have businesses, they have trucks and freezers, and they have land to grow food. And these are things that are a necessity for any group to survive. So we in a position where we kind of got to buy things from people, and then we got to protest them if they don't treat us a certain way. You know what I'm saying? Well, we got to be able to have our own. You know what I'm saying?
Because, you know, back in them days, like you said, the 60s, we had our own.
Yeah.
Now every corner store you go to in the U.S., there's an Indian guy in the corner store running it.
Yeah.
Taxing you. Getting our money. The alcohol prices and the cigarette prices is the lowest thing in the store.
Mm.
Because they know that's what we want.
Yeah, like you said, it affects the psyche. So many people is hopeless and then gave up, but you know, it's on us to get
up. I'm so glad you haven't given up.
Oh no.
I'm grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that. And just sitting here talking to you, like, to be 36. You know, when I was 36, I would never imagine having to be in your position and doing all that you have done. So is there anything you want to tell our audience that we haven't touched on?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. I just want to thank everybody so much for even taking time out to listen. And I want to thank you again for, you know, allowing me to come on your platform. I truly, truly appreciate you, and I'm glad that I made it.
I'm glad you did, too. When you told me you ain't go to Africa, I was so excited.
But we're going
to
reschedule.
I don't mean
that
in a bad way to you. I know you wanted to go, but I know I would.
Yeah.
But I was
right,
just so excited because we got to connect, you know.
Right. And we're going to connect again.
Oh, most definitely. I got some stuff in store for you.
Okay, cool.
Believe that. Well, give the audience all your social media sites, how they can contact you, and just especially your donations too, how they can donate to your cause too.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and you can find me under Camp Cleveland, C-A-M-P Cleveland. And also I have a website, campcleveland.org.
Cool. How can they donate to your cause?
Oh, okay. They could donate through the website.
Okay, great. Oh, man, that's amazing. That's great, too. Say that website one more time.
campcleveland.org.
Camp Cleveland, y'all hear that right, Camp Cleveland, O-R-G, to make donations. So what message do you hope to leave behind for the world to take with them?
Oh, man, that's a deep question. I mean, definitely want to leave a message of how powerful and impactful history can be. You know what I'm saying? It's important that we study our history. That's a necessity. You know, just like food and air and water, it's very important for us to know our history. That's why they took it from us, because it was important.
Okay. I have a question. Do you have your book with you?
No, I don't have a copy in my hand with me right now.
Okay. I was going to get you to read it, please. Are you married?
No, I'm single right now. I got to settle down. I got to sit on down. I'll be traveling so much.
Okay, ain't no way you can be married traveling in all them countries. Woo. I thought I was the number one bachelor. You the number one bachelor. But, man, it was an honor to have you on the show. And that's amazing. Keep doing what you're doing. And, man, we will connect after this show, because I'm going to get all your links, and I'm going to post them on my Facebook page and Instagram and Twitter page, too.
All right, King.
To let the world. I just want to thank you for coming on the show.
All right. Till next time. Peace, family.
Peace. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with this special offer. I'm not even going to tell y'all her name. I'm just going to wait to explain to her. She has an amazing story. She has been through a lot, and I can't wait to talk to her. So we're going to take a quick break real quick.
out the line. I'm back, relapse, I'm thinking. Yes, what's that? The fact I'm drinking.
Coconut oil, the scent of your body still lingers on sheets. I got a shot at you, you wanna reach? Cop that trigger release. Pop that top, take a sip of your holiest water. I know I'm a part of your flow now. Tell me you cut it, no matter you love her or not. You got part of a soul now. I ain't know them, but I know now. Apology dude, more than a few. The ones I ran through, but never loved you. I pray you found peace and you cold now. I'm doing better, I got me a chocolate bar. Comment on top of the bar. Think of the shape of the lick in the places you only gonna lick when you rock with a fuck. Ever.
Welcome back to the Author's Land, presented to you by Drifting Mike. Call in to 646-378-0355 or press 1 to speak. Our next guest, I have been following her for a while, and we have been acquainted in somewhat, and her story is amazing in its own right. And she has written two books. And she just recently dropped one. And I talked to her the other day. I was like, I want you to come on my show to tell your story. And she was like, sure, I would love to be on there. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Miss Quint Jones.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, girl?
So thanks
how
for having
you?
Me.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here. Thank you once again for having me. Oh, my.
You are welcome. Definitely welcome. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Whew. Okay. So telling the audience a little bit about myself, I am a certified life coach. I am a host of My Life Has Destiny podcast. I am an author. I have 2 books out. One of them I just finished. It's about my life story called Overcoming the Mask. And I'm a mother, a grandmother, and just a woman of God.
All right. Amazing, amazing. First, we're going to start out. I want you to tell us a little bit about your story. Because they need to know who authors. See, people don't really know who authors is. They know but not the person behind the book.
Right. So, okay. My story is a story of pain. I was birthed. My background, it comes from abuse, even as a little girl. I grew up in a household that was full of abuse. I seen it with my mom. It trickled down to me. I was a very rebellious child because I was molested as a child. I was almost raped by 5 guys. My cousin saved me. And then it trickled down to my girls. And I'm at the point now where I am a domestic violence advocate. And I have broken the cycle. It will not go down to my grandchildren. That we are now speaking out about it. For a long time, I would not speak about it. But my mentality now is, if you don't speak, you can't heal. So I encourage my daughters to speak about it. I encourage others. Started a women's ministry called My Life Has Destiny, which helps women that's in abuse to come out. So we are a resource. We help you find shelter. We help get you to a safe house. Whatever it is that you need is what we help with. So that's my background. My book, my first book was birthed out of pain because I was so disobedient and I was a runner. My mindset was that to run, and I ran physically. I would run state to state. It didn't matter, just to get out of my situation or get away from my situation. So now I'm at a place of obedience, not because somebody told me to, but because I want to be obedient to God. And it's a totally different feeling. It's a feeling of liberty. It's a feeling of love. And it's a feeling of peace. So, yes.
So tell the audience a little bit about your first book.
My first book is called Get Up and Get Out of Your Own Way. And as I said, it was birthed out of me taking my journey to obedience in 2018. It deals with affirmations. It deals with scripture, and it deals with identification. So I had to me in building me up because I didn't understand my worth. I was hurting, and I was going through, and God started to deal with me. So I began to affirm over my life. I began to truly see who I am and whose I am, and I realized I'm God's masterpiece. I'm the head and not the tail. I'm above and not beneath. So those affirmations alone just mean so much. And he had to show me that I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. He didn't make a mistake when he made me. No matter what I've been through or no matter what I'm going through, he did not make a mistake. And my life has purpose and it has destiny.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, growing up and going through all that you went through, how did you turn it into positive energy?
I had to learn to truly look at the positive and the negative, because growing up, my father wasn't there. I looked for him for a long time. So I had father-daughter syndrome, more or less. So I was looking for that father figure, but whoever came in my life to fill it could not fill that void. So I had a lot of hatred. I had a lot of anger. And then when I finally forgave him and turned that anger into positive, I realized it was for me. And I couldn't hold the grudge anymore. And then when I forgave him, he got sick. So I had him for a year, and then I lost him, and he passed away.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So
I've heard so many stories like that. When they finally meet that father, he don't last too long. But at least you got to meet him.
Right. And it wasn't that I didn't know him. He had an addiction. So he was sick. You know what I'm saying? So he didn't know how to love me. He couldn't love me. And although I had questions on, because it's seven of us on his side and I was the oldest, why did they have you and I didn't? But when I began to hear the stories, I'm like, he could not take care of me. He couldn't protect me. He had his own illness. So I can't hold a grudge against that. So I had to learn my void. He can't ever fill it. God has to fill that. And that's how I turned my positive, my negative into a positive.
Okay.
And then in my second marriage, I ended up marrying an addict.
So how did that go, your second marriage?
My second marriage to an addict, it did not go good. But I had sympathy for him, and I didn't judge him. I wanted to build him up, but I had to realize that in marrying that man, even though he was an addict, I still never belittled him. I still wanted to be there for him, but he didn't want it for himself. I saw his potential. I married his potential. I fell in love with his potential, but he didn't want it for himself, so it didn't work out. So we ended up getting a divorce after 3.5 years.
You know, it's so hard, you know, when people are struggling with addiction and, you know, we feel like nobody hears us and nobody loves us. We don't know how to take in love. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so by you seeing him struggle and going through that, what was your mindset in dealing with that?
At first, I was hurt. And I was like, why can't he love me more? Why can't he make me the priority? And then I had to realize it wasn't about me. Then I became angry, and I started doing things to hurt him. I became spiteful. I went to the point of, I'm just being transparent. I went looking for him in crack houses. I almost got into fights over him, all kinds of stuff. And then I had to realize, no matter what I do, he's not going to stop because he don't want to stop. And yeah. Then when we went through counseling, after I broke up everything in my house, I snapped. I sprayed some stuff in his clothes to cause him to have an allergic reaction. I did some stuff. Okay. I was very, very spiteful because I was hurting. And I talked to my pastor, went through counseling, and he was like, listen, he said, the wife got the right to be angry, but allow the evangelist to rise up. And he said, you're fighting the wrong battle. And those words changed my life. I said, okay, I need to fight this a different way. I can't fight this in the flesh. I have to get in the spirit. But no matter what, I can fight and I can war on his behalf, but God don't force you to change. You have to want to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mindset. And when I moved, I literally moved from Georgia to North Carolina to save my marriage. And we sat down with the pastor I was under at the time, and he said the first true statement, I liked the feeling of getting high. That's when I knew it was time for me to let go, because he wasn't going to let go.
Mm-hmm. True. So after that journey, did you write your first book, or you was just contemplating?
After that journey, I wrote my first book. That was on my road to obedience. Literally, while I was writing that book and I made the decision, Lord, I want to serve you in spite of, no matter what. If my pastor don't serve you, I want to serve you. My pastor quit the church.
Okay.
He stopped going for like a month. I kept the doors of the church open. And I was like, okay, God, I don't know why I was saying those words, but if she don't come back soon, this church is going to close because I'm nobody's pastor. But it was about
You know what's so funny? When we get in a breakup or something like that, we always want to tell God, please bring that person back.
Right.
And it's so funny because I'm laughing because I've did the same thing. Like, I talked to a pastor every day. Oh, my God, I can't live without her. Boom, boom, boom. She wasn't meant for me.
Right.
That's the bottom line. She wasn't meant for me. She was only there for a season.
She came back, though. She came back to the church. I'm no longer with the pastor, but she did come back to the church. Because if she would not have, it's a small church. This was her church. You can quit your own church. Because if you quit, the doors are going to close. I promise I am not a pastor. I don't want to be anybody's pastor. No.
Maybe that was good for you.
It was good for me. It was good for me at the time. But it wasn't good for me to stay. So, yes, it was very good because it helped me to grow and to mature and to realize that no matter what, I have to be loyal to God. It's not about man, because a pastor's flesh, it's not about man. It's all about me and my obedience to God and me being able to stand despite what I go through, despite my circumstances.
And you know what's so funny? Like, my dad, he's a pastor, and, you know, my uncles and granddad, they was all pastors. And I would go to church. I would see everybody worshiping the pastor. I'm like, huh, really?
Right.
And they get it misconstrued. You know, they always look at me like, oh, you the devil. No, I have my own spirituality. I know God is in my heart. I speak to him personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about worshiping the pastor, bishop this, bishop that, bishop that. No, what about me? You know?
Right. Exactly. And I had to get to that point because with my first church that I really became committed to, I was age 22 when I started going. And I stayed there for 11 years because she was my mother-in-law. I went through spiritual abuse. I was being abused in my home verbally, mentally, emotionally, and physically to a point. So I stayed. Don't get me wrong. Through all of the negative, I got great teaching. And I saw the positive. And I kept my mouth shut for a long time, even after I left. And after I left, I called people and told them, continue to go to church because God didn't tell you to leave. Continue. Yeah. Even though I'm gone, that's not your journey. God moved me because of what I was going through, but that's not your journey. Until he tell you to move, you stay. So I did that for a long time, but I was young when I first started going. And in me being young, I praised my pastor. I thought me serving my pastor was me serving God. Things started to go crazy when I began to say, hold up. This is not right.
Yeah.
He's not God. And I started opening my mouth and speaking the things that I saw that was wrong. And then it brought about conflict. But as long as I was that puppet, everything was peaceful.
Yeah.
And that's where we get. We become people pleasers instead of God pleasers. And a lot of pastors will take advantage of you being a babe in Christ and you just wanting to serve him and you being on fire for him, and they manipulate you into serving them instead of serving God. So they begin to operate in the spirit of witchcraft. But that's a whole nother topic.
That's true, because me, they can't manipulate me. I see through it all. You know what I mean? When that basket gets passed around three times, I'm like, oh, Lord, here we go. But let me behave. I'm going to behave tonight.
Yes, behave.
So, all right, you wrote your first book. How did the public receive it?
Most of the people that I know that read the book told me it really helped them. When I got the book reviewed, she was like, oh, my. I normally stay away from self-help books. She said, but this right here really helped me. So I'm still pushing it. I'm believing God for greater works, greater sales. And I'm believing that it's going to touch so many people because I believe it's needed. A lot of women don't know who they are. And we get in our own way because of low self-esteem and because of our circumstance. We focus on the circumstance instead of focusing on where we're going.
True. So, we're going to start with your new book. Tell us the name of that.
Overcoming the Mask, Something Had to Break.
I love that title.
Thank you.
I love the book cover. I love everything about that book.
Thank you.
So tell us about it. Do you have it with you, too? I want you to read a piece.
Honestly, I don't have it with me. I placed the order. It was supposed to come out in October, and because it's based on my life, I got stuck, and I didn't want to deal with certain parts of it. So I stopped writing. And then I pre-released it on purpose so that I can be held accountable. And when I pre-released it, I finished it, and I uploaded it. And I self-published the book, but I was having trouble with the book cover. And when I was supposed to get it released on the specific date, it didn't happen. So my books are not here, and I had to push back my book signing.
So tell us a little bit about it.
So once again, it's based on my life. It literally starts from my childhood and what I went through with my mom. And honestly, with the molestation, I felt like my mom knew a lot of it. But when she was going to bring me to the doctor, he manipulated her, and she didn't. So I just, like I said, I've been through so much, and even dealing with grief. In my teenage year, I was dating this guy, and he was 23, and he was the love of my life. And I found out he got sick, that rushed to the hospital. I uprooted everything, moved in the hospital with him, and he ended up dying from cancer. So I went through an abandonment stage. I dealt with depression. I started drinking. My mom didn't know that, but I was drinking every day, trying to drink my sorrows away. And it was a hard time for me. And I was very promiscuous. After that, even before that, I became promiscuous because of the molestation. And when you deal with certain things, you start to deal with ungodly soul ties. So that was a big part of my life. And I had to take time to regroup. And I ended up getting pregnant, drunk. My aunt told my mom, don't let her go out like that. And I did. Got drunk, got pregnant, and the man did not want to take care of his child. And to this day, he does not. And she's 25. So, yeah, I've been through some stuff, a lot of stuff. I almost died in my first marriage, literally from the stress of it. My uterus collapsed. Woke up one day and couldn't walk. My body was deteriorating from the inside out due to the stress. So I had to have an emergency hysterectomy at the age of 34.
Whoa, wow.
The doctor was like, surgery or die. You make the choice. I was like, well, he's not doing right. I'm not going to have the surgery. I don't have anybody to take care of me. And when I say God works in mysterious ways, he turned him around so that I can have that surgery. And right after I healed, he started acting up again, literally. Mm. So I divorced him in 2009. I found out he was messing around with young girls. When I found out, of course, I was in denial. Nobody don't want to hear that their husband is messing around with underage children, that he's calling them his daughter, but he's literally sleeping with them. So
yes, right.
That was hard. My daughter was being manipulated. So she was, you know, we didn't have a good relationship for a while. And then God revealed it by that girl when she turned 19. She got pregnant by him.
Mm.
So, yeah. He just finished, well, he might be still going through a case because that baby said he messed with her too. But the problem is he never gets convicted.
Okay, so are you an advocate for domestic violence? Do you do like community work and everything?
Yes, I put on different events. I will have different speakers. Through My Life Has Destiny, we have held a couple of events last year. We're planning on doing some this year, but we're just getting dates together now. Fred, he was one of my speakers. I don't know if you know Empress Colleen Williams. She collaborated with me and got it going again. And yeah, we collaborate with different different entities just to, you know, build up the people.
So who was your inspiration?
My inspiration was my uncle. He passed away when I was 21, but he took on the father role. And anything that a child could have, he provided, even vacations. He took me to Disney World for my 12th birthday, but he still couldn't fill the void because he wasn't my father. But he was my inspiration.
Okay. So the next couple of years, what do you hope to accomplish?
The next couple of years, marriage.
I know you didn't say that. No, I'm just kidding.
I went past that, right? I want to become a full-time entrepreneur, and the goal for My Life Has Destiny is to open up a transition center.
Okay. So what about your writing? What do you want to – what's your goal for that?
I'm working on the part two of Overcoming the Mask now, and I want to go global with that. Like, I want to tour just telling my story and selling my books.
that's a good thing. So what platforms are you on, and do you have any shows that you currently do?
I'm on Trailblazers. We have My Life Has Destiny podcast normally on Wednesday night. Tomorrow we actually have Milagros coming on. She's out of Puerto Rico, and she's also a domestic violence advocate. I am, sometimes I go and do interviews on different shows. Angela, I've been on a few of her shows, Angela Thomas-Smith, and that's basically it. I'm just trying to get it out there. I'm new to this, so I'm trying to get it out there.
Okay. So I want to know, you know, we all grew up in, you know, similar, because my situation is similar to yours too, growing up. How did you turn your experience growing up in a domestic violence home and going through that and turning it into positive energy?
For one, I know it's not right. And I always say, even as a child, I did not want to be a byproduct of my environment. Growing up, I grew up in the ghetto. I've watched a lot of my friends get killed. Literally, I had went down the street, spoke to somebody, gave him a hug, went back home. I wasn't gone for 10 minutes and he got killed. So if I would have stayed five more minutes, I would have lost my life.
Wow.
So I always say I don't ever want to be a byproduct of my environment, and I've seen it growing up all my life. So something had to break. Something had to change. I had to break the cycle. It had to start with me. So I had to change my mindset and say, okay, I need to prosper. I want to be the first millionaire in my life. I don't want to live in poverty. My household is never going to have lack. So that's what I began to do. That's what I began to work towards. I've been on my own basically since I was 17. So I had to move forward.
Here comes the magical question for you. You know, growing up, they said, don't tell what's going on in your house. Whatever's going on in your household, keep it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find the peace of mind to cope with everything you've been through?
God. It's nobody mm-hmm. but God.
I still struggle with what I've been through. I still mm-hmm. get upset when I think about it. I still feel a certain type of way. My insecurities creep up on me. All the above creep into my thoughts.
Mm-hmm. See, my biggest thing was forgiveness. That's where my peace came in. I had to learn that as long as I forgive them, they can't control me. So,
okay.
I had
that's my biggest issue.
Forgiveness.
How do you forgive when it hurts so bad?
Once again, recognizing that forgiveness is for you. Because mm-hmm. if somebody can determine your day, you gave them too much power.
Wow.
Nobody
okay.
should be able to, you walk in a room and you was in a great mood, and now all of a sudden your life turned upside down. Now mm-hmm. you enraged, and now you going after them. That's too much power for one person to have over your life.
Mm-hmm.
Only God deserves that type of power because he's the creator.
Okay.
So in that, that's like you deciding, I'm just going to lay down my life for them. I'm just going to give in. No, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You determine your peace. They don't deserve it. They hurt you enough. So I had to look up forgiveness scriptures. I had to realize that God forgives me 70 times, 7 times a day. Who
mm-hmm.
am I to hold a grudge? I've watched my mom hold a grudge against her father, and he's dead.
Mm.
You going to allow somebody to send you to hell for holding a grudge?
Wow.
Too much power.
That's true. And you know, it's so hard for us blacks because, you know, they was like, they'll tell you, get over it. Don't get help in it. You need to get over whatever happened in the past. No, it hurts. It's a part of my life. That's what I went through. That's what I saw. That predicted me and helped me to become the man that I am by seeing what I seen. So why should I push it under the rug?
But what have you done to others? Do you want them to forgive you? How can you carry, how can you have a healthy relationship if you still carry in your past?
I could.
How can you? Exactly. Exactly. So as long as you're holding on to what they did, you're always going to compare what they did to what's going on in your present and in your future. And it's going to become toxic.
Mm. Yeah.
So you got to let it go in order for you to move up, in order for you to prosper. You're holding up your own life.
And, you know, I did that for so long.
Wow. So how did you let it go? Or did you let it go?
Shoot, I got a therapist for that. We talk. But, no, I do. I talk to therapists and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, you know, forgiveness and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it boils down to me of then, like you said, letting other people control who I am and what I do.
Exactly. Exactly. And see,
you know,
a lot of black people don't feel like they need therapy. Oh, we don't go to therapy. Oh, what you mean? No, we just going to go to our path. No. I was trying to get counseling from a pastor that was abusing me. How crazy is that?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the mindset.
Well, they tell you to pray, and the prayers ain't getting answered, so you like, oh, Lord, this ain't working. So what's my next step?
Exactly. And that's how I ended up in my first marriage. It was like, did I want to marry him? Or was it projected on me? I don't even think I wanted to marry him, but I got pregnant, and she was like, you need to stay in the prayer line. You need to, this is your second child out of wedlock. no, you're trying to get rid of your son. But I didn't recognize that because I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
And hurt people. So it was a cycle.
Yes.
She was abused, and she became an abuser. Stayed in that for 11 years. But
wow.
It wasn't even my prayer. It wasn't something that I would not have married him because we were already dealing with abuse. When I was pregnant, we was fighting. He mushed my head. I jumped out of a car, a moving car, and started fighting him while I was 5 months pregnant. So do I want that in my marriage? The signs are already there.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, it's going to carry over, but she's still saying, you need to be in the prayer line. You're a part of the church. Get in the prayer line. He'll marry you. Trust God.
Yeah. I definitely understand that.
So it was like a forced marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That almost cost me my life. My aunt was saying, don't marry that man, but my pastor saying, you need to marry him. See the conflict?
Yeah, I do. So I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to let society know and be aware of domestic violence and what's really going on?
Education is important. Speaking out about it is important. Letting them know that they're not alone, because that's one of the biggest issues. A lot of people become embarrassed because they fall into it and they feel like, oh, I don't have nobody to turn to. And when I got pregnant by my daughter, that's how I felt. I was isolated from my family, and I stayed with that man for so long in the abuse. I was like, I can't go back home. I've been out of this house since I was 17. How am I going back home? I was just back and forth. This is not my home. I don't have help. Me and my mom don't have a good relationship. Who am I going to turn to? Where's my finances coming from? You know, and those are all the questions that a lot of people have when they end up in abuse. But there is help. There's agencies. So we just got to educate them.
You're totally right.
More people became a resource and an educator. More people will come out of it, and they won't die in it. There's so many people dying in domestic violence right now, especially due to this pandemic, because they're stuck with their...
I read today on the news where a whole family was murdered because of a stimulus check.
Jesus. Is it that serious?
Mm-hmm.
For $1,400?
I'm trying to tell you. I am trying to tell you.
Wow.
So, Ms. Quinn Jones, where can we find you on social media and all your outlets so we can get in touch with you or buy some of your books?
So on Facebook, I am under Quint Jones. On Twitter, I am Purpose. On Instagram, I'm under My Life Has Destiny. And then I have a website, QuintJones.com.
Excellent. So on your show, The Trailblazer, what do you talk about?
We talk about domestic violence. We talk about empowerment. We just bring different topics. Sometimes we bring series. We just went through a series called Life Before Salvation. And we just had different pastors come on and talk about their life before they got saved. And it was awesome. I mean, very, very awesome. And we just inspire people.
That's so amazing. Because I know I was a guest on your show, and it was an amazing show. So I'm so glad that you could return the favor. That was an honor in itself.
Yes. We're going to have you back. We definitely got to have you back. Because you're doing big things. I'm watching you. You're doing big things.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm trying.
No, you doing. See, try is a cop-out. Try is a cop-out. Take that word out your vocabulary. You doing.
Okay.
And more people need to see Black people as a mentor. Mm-hmm. It's so important because of where we come from. A lot of them looking at these rappers and stuff, but a lot of young people don't realize that is a facade. A lot of these rappers got business degrees. They've been to school. That rapping is not their main source of income. They're not really in that rivalry and all that stuff going on. Like, that's to sell records.
That's it. And you know what? They put on this facade so bad that they even get killed
behind
wearing that facade.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Being big and bad, and they getting killed for something they are not.
Exactly. And see, we have to learn that we are not each other's competition. Each one reach one. If we one person pull up the other person, guess how many people would come up? Come on. We don't got to be each other's competition. Mm-hmm.
But we've been brainwashed for so long, that's all we see. We can't let nobody come up. We can't let nobody get to where they need to get to. Do you know if they let us get to where we need to get to, we come get them to go where we at.
Right. So true.
And they can bypass all the stops we had to make.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You coming straight into the game without having to make the pit stops that I made.
Right.
That's my gift
to you. We already been through the experience. So now let me show you so you don't have to go through the hard times. You can just go straight to the top.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm always talking to my homeboys. I'm like, dude, if I get this place and get this place, I want you there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know you. I know your personality. I know everything about you. So why would I want to put somebody that I don't know about and I can have you there?
But, you know, a lot of times it's the very ones that are close to us that end up not being able to go with us.
You know, I had a friend when I first started this writing thing. I wanted to do a play. He is amazing. He does movies by himself. He's from my hometown. I mean, he's amazing. He got stage fright. He got nervous. And he said,
wow.
I can't do it. I'm too nervous. I'm not ready for this. I'm like, man, this is your chance.
Right. Well,
but I'm so glad you came on the show tonight.
I'm glad to be here. I'm excited.
So is there anything you want to leave with the world to let them know?
I just want to say, as I said, don't become a byproduct of your circumstance. Don't even focus on your circumstance, because the things that are seen are temporal, but the things that are not seen are eternal. So walk by faith, stay in your purpose. Write your vision and make it plain, and make sure you manifest it.
Amen. Thank you for coming on the show, Ms. Quint Jones.
You are most welcome. Thank you for having me. I'll be reaching out to you real soon.
Okay. I'm ready. I'm always ready.
Okay. All right. Well, you have an awesome night, and I thank you again for having me.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, guys. Before I close for the night, I promise y'all that I will read a little passage from my book. Since I can't never post this online because it's a little, you know, nasty. But since we've grown and we all on live, I'm going to give it to you. Here we go. Passage from The Player and Me Too by Hezekiah Morris. Dapping up the crew, the moment Yolanda and Z finished our drinks, Z told him he would get up with them later on that day. I cannot wait to be alone with you, Yolanda said excitedly as they got in the car. Oh, how you are driving me crazy, Z said as he kissed her and started rubbing her thighs. Going to Yolanda's house, Z pulled down her zipper to her dress, admiring her assets and planting kisses on her. Laying her on the bed, Z poured Patron down her body. Using his tongue, Z licked the liquor, which glistened off of her, starting to lick the liquor from her round breast, then proceeding to her navel, where he stopped. Pulling both her legs up, Z lowered his head. "Yes, yes," Yolanda moaned uncontrollably, unable to believe he had her body feeling this way. Licking and sucking her pink cookie, Z twirled her around, poured more liquor down her backside. "Ooh," Yolanda screamed as she was climaxing, grabbing her body. Z held it close to his, tied both her hands together with her nylon stockings, making her get on all fours. Unzipping his trousers, Z pulled out his 10-inch tube, slided it in her mouth, with her slurping and spitting all over his manhood until he dropped his load all on her lips and down her throat. Feeling the warmth of her moist pink cookie, Z slid two fingers inside of her, turned her around, slid on his condom, and put her in the doggy style position as he gently entered inside of her, which she moved her ass back and forth. Rolling her over, Z untied her, letting her get on top. As her pink cookie got hotter and hotter, his manhood got harder and larger, swelling to fit her. Yolanda's moaning and screaming got louder as she grabbed the headboard, riding faster and harder on top of Z. The sex was getting intense, and Z felt he was about to explode all inside of her. This feeling was different. It was more than just pleasure. It was as if she was a star in a film. Rising up off of him, Yolanda grabbed his manhood, stroking it and sucking it, spitting all around. Unable to control everything, letting out a huge roar, Z exploded all over her, while she came everywhere, with her body shaking and locking up at the same time. The rain pelted against the window pane. "You were amazing," Z said as he lit up a cigarette. While she cuddled up to him, looking him in the eyes while caressing his body, she said, "Thank you." Kissing her deeply as he laid in there, lost in thoughts, he replied, "Anytime," while turning on his phone to order his lift that would take him back to his room. On March 28th, I'll be doing a book club, and we will be dissecting The Player in Me Too, going through everything in the book. So tune in for more, and I want to thank y'all for tuning in tonight to tonight's great show presented by Drifter Mike. Thank you all, and have a good night. Drop it low.